The BBC presents Gordon Jackson in The Same River Twice, a serial thriller in eight parts by Edward Boyd. More and more people are beginning to suspect that Johnny Maxson murdered his wife. The latest is his mother-in-law, who provides him with a motive: the truth about his daughter Sarah's death. The Same River Twice, Part 8.
She sat there, her face white and pure as bone, not blaming, not condoning, not anything. Neutral. Wrong. Tell me what happened to Sarah.
What are you trying to do? Justify yourself?
Humor me. What happened?
There was a party here at this flat one night. A small party. I think there was a fair amount of drinking.
What you're really saying is that they were all blocked out of their brains.
Anyway, about midnight, Julia suddenly took it into her head that they should all go down to the cottage. She was like that, remember? Impulsive.
Do I remember?
There were two cars. They packed into them and drove off.
Taking Sarah with them?
Oh, they couldn't very well have left her here by herself, Johnny.
What worse thing could have happened to her if they had?
Johnny.
Oh, never mind, go on.
Well, they got down there safe enough and the party went on. It was a glorious moonlit night and somebody suggested they should go out for a sail on the loch.
Julia?
Yes. They piled into the dinghy and started up the engine. Sarah was sitting up in the bow, the way she used to. Julia was at the tiller. They were still drinking.
And then what?
Then Julia decided she wanted to go in for a swim.
She was always doing that, showing the boys what they were missing. She should have been a stripper.
Please, Johnny.
All right, all right.
Young Walter Templeton took over the tiller. Julia stood up in the boat and started to undress. Everybody was laughing and shouting and cheering. Then Sarah got frightened, and then hysterical. I want to go home, she kept shouting. I want to go home. Julia began to scream at her, and that only made Sarah worse. She became really hysterical. Then Julia reached over and slapped her.
Then?
Sarah lost her balance and fell overboard. Young Templeton panicked, swung the boat round and capsized it. He and Sarah were drowned.
Just an ordinary, everyday story of mother love and devotion.
You must try to forgive her.
Who were the others? Who were the other splendid citizens who let my daughter drown?
Tom Armstrong was there, young Walter Templeton, a man called Jenkins who's gone abroad somewhere, a girl called Louise Blake, and Sandra Bailey.
The girl who committed suicide?
Yes.
You told me Julia had never mentioned her.
She was there.
Tell me, how did I sit in Paris and find all this out, Helen? Tell me that.
Pete Hodgson came to see me one night. He said he'd been working over there and had looked you up.
So?
I think he told you about Sarah.
Pete knew all about this?
Yes.
Where did he get his information?
He never told me.
You mentioned Louise Blake. That's a new name.
A very strange girl, by all accounts.
You never met her?
No, but Julia talked about her a lot. It seems she was completely on her own. No friends, no relatives, but plenty of money.
What happened to her?
I heard she was in a nursing home somewhere.
You don't know where?
No.
Julia, Tom Armstrong, Templeton, Sandra Bailey, all dead. This Blake girl in a nursing home. Yeah, they got punished all right. But why Sarah? And why me?
Who's punishing you, Johnny?
You are.
You don't understand.
I certainly don't understand. You're convinced I killed Julia. Why didn't you just go to the police?
Because there's been enough suffering already. Because I didn't want to add one iota to it. And because I didn't want you to think you'd got away with it.
I see. Helen, it's always a dangerous pastime playing at being a god. And that's what you've been doing. Oh, I believe everything you've said about your reasons for it. Great. I even believe you believe them. Great. But the whole thing's backfired, Helen, with a great big dreary bang. You start out to save my soul and end up by betraying your own.
I still think you killed her, Johnny.
Feel free to do so, but choose your side, Helen. You can't have it both ways. You can't be for me and against me.
Have you chosen yours, Johnny?
Yes. After tonight, we are never going to see each other again, whatever happens. Because you're not you anymore, as far as I'm concerned. And you've made it painfully obvious that I'm a different Johnny Maxson in your book. I don't know you any longer. I know nothing about you, nothing. I don't know whether you're a saint or a monster.
And which are you, Johnny? Tell me. Which are you?
When she had gone, the blues moved in. And if you don't know where the blues are, congratulations, liar. The blues are what you have when you have nothing else. So I walked abroad in the bitter night, sequins of frost in the streets, what lights there were green with cold. The sun and life and warmth and joy and laughter, all seemingly gone forever. Your prayers are requested for a child drowned by moonlight. The night people were there, clustered round the coffee stall. The twitches, scars, malice, fear, obsessions, the victims. Join the club. And among them, like the shepherd of a diseased flock, Inspector Wardlaw.
I was talking about you not so very long ago.
I'll bet you were.
In the bar at the Loch Derrick Hotel.
You were talking to Bunty Nickel?
Just so.
What did he tell you?
Oh, he was telling me some story about seeing two women down at yon cottage the night your wife went missing.
One was dark and one was blonde. The dark one was Julia. They shouted my name, the door opened, they went inside. There was a flash of light and a scream. And then the blonde one came running out of the cottage, a quote, as if the devil was after her, unquote.
He told me more than that.
Do you need more?
He witnessed that accident when your daughter was drowned.
Yes. Yes, he would. If it had to be anyone, it would be Bunty.
He doesn't like you, that one.
I beat him up once. Caught him doing his peeping Tom.
A peeping Tom can still be a credible witness.
None better. Well, Inspector, you've got the full set now. Means, motive, and opportunity. Why don't you arrest me?
Oh, there's no great hurry for that.
No?
I like things tidy, Maxson. There are still some small untidinesses about this business.
Name one.
Well, for example, who was that other woman and where did she go?
Maybe I killed her, too.
The thought had crossed my mind. Did you know which set's Tom Armstrong's office?
What did you find?
All kinds of interesting things, including a will.
What was interesting about it?
He left everything to your wife.
Well, how about that?
So there you are, Maxson. If your wife died intestate and you didn't kill her, there's every chance of you becoming a very rich man.
I walked home, savoring the irony of all that guilt, wondering if ever I could live in the style to which I had always never been accustomed. The cold was savage now, but apart from that, nothing else was happening. It was very pleasant, I found. Nothing happening. The telephone woke me the following morning. Johnny Maxson?
It's Dorothy. Did I wake you up?
You did. What time is it?
10 to 11.
It's not.
Did you have a late night last night?
Sort of. Why aren't you at school?
The pipes are frozen. Everything's frozen. Half the kids didn't turn up, so the boss lady sent us all home. So I have a day off.
Hooray for you.
Any suggestions for making it memorable?
I'd like to go back to Loch Derrick.
Not again, Johnny.
Again.
But why?
Things have happened.
I'll be with you in an hour.
I spent the intervening hour phoning nursing homes. The first 6 calls were answered by a robot with a white voice. No, sir, we have no patient here called Louise Blake. Sorry.
But the seventh robot said, "Yes, sir, she is here. Of course you may come and see her. Visiting hours, we don't have these, not anymore. The new idea is not to make our patrons feel cut off and rejected and removed from the world outside. Visitors may come at any time, within reason, naturally. Part of the therapy, and thank you, sir. You're welcome." Dorothy picked me up in the corner, and we drove along the lock side to Bunty Nichols' cottage. There was a green van drawn up at the side of it, and as we got out of the car, Bunty emerged from the cottage and stood there exercising his piggy little eyes.
"What do you want?"
"What I really want is to punch you in the mouth, but we'll take things in decent order."
"You heard that, didn't you? You're a witness."
"You must excuse me. I came out in such a hurry this morning, I forgot my hearing aid and my glasses."
"You're as bad as he is."
"Well, I wouldn't go that far."
"I have got nothing to say to you, Maxon."
"You weren't quite so shy with Inspector Wardlaw last night."
"He asked the questions. I answered them."
"So, you told the inspector the truth, Bunty?"
"I did."
"How did it feel, a new experience like that?"
"It felt just fine."
"Then you should have gone the whole hog and told the whole truth."
"You're quite finished, Maxon. I've got things to do."
"Just what are you doing these days, Bunty?"
"None of your business."
"Maybe we can put a little business your way, Bunty. Interested?"
"I'm listening."
"There's a painting down at the cottage. I'm not very fond of it. You know how you can go off things. I'd like you to take it back to where you got it."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"That is the van you saw, isn't it, Dorothy?"
"That's it, all right. Remember, I gave you the number and everything."
"You collected that painting and brought it down here, didn't you, Bundy? Who were you working for? Who paid you?"
"I've got nothing to say."
"You have, you know. Or would you prefer to say something to Inspector Wardlaw? Who was it, Bunty?"
"Tom Armstrong."
"And what else did you do for him, Bunty? Did you do the ghostly fingers bit on the window when Julia was there alone, did you?"
"Yes."
"I'll bet he paid you well, didn't he? Stands to reason, doesn't it? New van, fully paid off." "And what else, Bunty? A 23-inch TV set, a washing machine. Could we look inside your cottage, little man?"
"Leave me alone."
"Could we?"
"No."
"You knew Tom Armstrong, don't you?"
"Slightly."
"A generous man, you'd say?"
"With money, yes."
"Even so, that van of Bunty's must have cost a bomb."
"What are you getting at?"
"I think someone else was contributing to Bunty's welfare fund." "Was it Julia, you dirty little maggot?"
"Leave me alone."
"It was, wasn't it? You were playing both ends against the middle, weren't you? You knew the truth about the accident, very different from the story the police were told. You saw the whole thing, didn't you?"
"Yes, I saw it. I told the inspector I saw it. I'm glad it happened. And I'm glad it happened to you, Maxon. I'm glad it was your daughter."
"Ah, you filthy
Johnny,
little..."
"Johnny, you crazy. Stop it. You'll kill him. Johnny!" "I think you better go back to the car, Johnny."
"Yes.
I saved your life, Bunty. I think I must be out of my head."
In the car, the reaction, the trembling hands, the sickness, nausea itself at everything, the sick excitement, the remembrance of the animal that momentarily escaped.
"Where to now?"
"A nursing home, I know."
"Who do you know that's in a nursing home?"
"A certain Louise Blake, and I don't know her. I've never met her before in my life." The nursing home was 7 miles the other side of the city. It stood on its own grounds and cultivated the image of a stately home. There were lawns and avenues, and carefully geometrical flower beds. Inside, everything was light, clean, brisk, airy and efficient.
"Of course, she was very disturbed when she turned up here that afternoon about 3 months ago. Very disturbed indeed. She's much better now, but I'm afraid you still mustn't expect too much."
"I understand."
"We did try to contact friends and relatives, but there didn't seem to be any."
"We've been out of the country."
"Ah. Here we are, then. Incidentally, in case of an emergency, there's a bell at the bedside. some friends to see you, Miss Blake. I'll leave you to it.
She was sitting there in bed, her face serene, hair brushed and shining, singing a lullaby to a doll.
Johnny. Come and sit down. You can sit on the end of the bed if you like.
Hello, Julia.
You mustn't call me that. That's my old name.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
That's all right. Down will come, baby.
Can you tell us your new name?
Louise. Do you like it?
Very much.
I think people should be able to change their names as often as they want to. I mean, after all, we grow out of clothes, and even after we're fully grown, we don't go around wearing the same dress all the time, do we? Do you?
No.
Different clothes make you feel a different person. It's the same with names.
When you were Julia, what kind of person were you?
Oh, a sort of Roman empress sort of a person. You wouldn't have cared much for her. Louise is much nicer. I think I'm going to be Louise for a long time. Isn't this a nice doll I've got?
It's beautiful.
I had another one, but it fell into the water.
That was a Julia doll.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Down will come, baby.
Did you like being Julia?
No. No, I didn't. It was horrible. Things happened.
What kind of things?
You can call me Louise if you want to.
What kind of things, Louise?
The telephone. No one would speak. Then dead people. The doll on the telephone. Birthday cards. The dead doll. It fell into
the... That was the Julia doll, remember?
Yes. I like you. Who are you?
Nobody in particular.
The man said you were a friend of mine. Are you?
No.
I'm glad.
Why, Louise?
Friends are dangerous. They hurt you. They tell lies. There's a man here who comes and talks to me. He pretends he's my friend. I hate him.
Now you're talking like Julia.
Am I? I'm sorry. I mustn't do that. I'd try hard. It's not easy.
I once had a friend called Tom.
So had I.
Tell us about him.
He was very wicked.
What did he do?
He told lies about Johnny.
Who was Johnny?
Johnny was... someone else.
What did he say about Johnny?
He said all those horrible, frightening things. Telephone, painting. He said it was Johnny. Johnny, because
the... Because you let the dead doll fall into the water?
Yes.
Are you very tired?
No, not at all.
Shall I tell you something?
Please do.
There's a hairdresser comes here every week.
That's marvellous.
She looks after my wig, too.
You have a wig?
Oh, yes. A blonde one.
Can you remember when you last wore it?
The night I became Louise.
Tell us about the night you became Louise.
Strange. All mixed up. Tom said that he had Johnny down at the cottage, and he had proof that Johnny was doing all those wicked things, and we would go down and tell Johnny we knew about him and punish him. Then Tom phoned. Yes, he did. And said something had happened. He would join me later, and would I go on down?
With Louise?
No. Wait a minute. Yes. I was supposed to be Julia alone. But then there was Louise, too. And we were still each other. Not yet together.
Me becoming her, like now.
Did you see Johnny?
What was so wicked? Johnny wasn't there. Julia then, and Louise then. We walked up and knocked at the door of the cottage. I was excited. I shouted, "Johnny, open, I know you're there." And the door opened, and Louise, yet she was Louise then, flashed a light. And it wasn't Johnny, not at all, never Johnny, it was Tom. He was wicked, wicked. And the light went out and a scream. And I ran away, got into the car and drove off and became Louise.
How did you become Louise?
They brought me here. I had papers and things. They said I was Louise. Everybody called me Louise. I wanted to be Louise and stay here and never leave and be safe from Tom. And I shall.
You're quite safe now.
It's good.
Why do you think Tom was so wicked, Louise?
He was cross with me. I was going away. Somewhere. With another man. I forget. Tom wanted me to be with him always. Married. I'm tired now.
I'm sorry.
I always sleep a little in the afternoon.
We're going now.
I don't dream so much of the doll. Doll. It fell.
You've got a new doll now, Louise. The other was a Julia doll. You can stop worrying. Your new doll will never, never fall into the water.
And so we drove away from the nursing home, with the day dying round us, the sky shading pink to blue, the sun on the frame of the horizon like the red dot on a soul painting. And all the hatred, all the bitterness, all the anger gone because of a doll that fell into the water.
Poor Louise. She gives Julia a lift down to the cottage and ends up strangled.
It was a blonde wig. If Julia hadn't worn that blonde wig...
There must have been a remarkable resemblance. I mean, you identified her as Julia.
She'd been in the water for 3 months, and I wanted to believe she was dead.
Why did Tom do it, Johnny?
He'd lost her once to me. Then he thought he'd got her back. Instead, he found he was about to lose her again, and it was too much.
But what about the telephone calls and the letters and all the other sadistic tricks?
Oh, I don't know. I think he was trying to hold on to her by making her dependent on
him. In what way?
Well, he built me up as a bogeyman figure. I made sure he was always around for Julia to run to.
All for love.
Yeah. Will you do 2 things for me, Dorothy?
Of course.
Stop at the first place you see with a telephone. I want to call Inspector Wardle.
What's the other thing?
When you've dropped me at the flat, I'd like you to go out and talk to Julia's mother.
Isn't there a 3rd thing?
Yes.
What is it?
Come back to the flat. Inspector Wardlaw was waiting when I arrived at the flat. Incredible blue Highland eyes. A dangerous, jolly face like a cattle auctioneer. I told him the story and waited for his comment.
I owe you an apology, Maxon.
For suspecting me?
For making use of you.
I'm not with you.
When we searched Armstrong's office, we found more than that will I mentioned. We found tapes of your daughter's voice and several birthday cards of the type that was sent to your wife.
And you let me go through with it?
This other woman bothered me. I thought you might lead me to her. I was right in the wrong way and... I'm heart sorry for it.
I suppose the money will still go to Julia.
I should think so. With someone to administer it, of course.
I suppose that's something. What happens now?
I will submit my report to the Procurator Fiscal. After that, it's up to him.
That'll be Dorothy Havergal.
I'll let her in as I go out. Good night to you, Maxon. Once more, my apologies.
You've no need to reproach yourself, Inspector.
Nevertheless, I shall continue to do so. Good night, Johnny Maxon.
Good night, Inspector.
Good night, Miss Havergal.
Good evening, Inspector.
Good night to you.
I came back, Johnny.
What did Helen say?
She's ashamed. Very deeply ashamed. And she'd like to see you.
Well, that's out of the question.
I love the view from this window.
I can't think. So many things to think about, my brain's numb.
Ask me to stay, Johnny.
Why should you?
Because I want to.
You mustn't be sorry for me.
I'm not.
Then I'd like you to stay.
That's all I asked.
I think it's going to snow.
The eighth and final part of The Same River Twice, a serial by Edward Boyd, was produced for the BBC by Eddie Fraser.